Welcome to China in Context. I'm Duncan Bartlett. In the past few decades, Chinese factories have become adept at making goods which are appreciated by customers all over the world. Manufacturing has become central to the country's economic success story. However, important changes are taking place as China's leaders urge manufacturing companies to compete more vigorously with rival nations, including Taiwan and the United States. The focus has shifted to advanced types of technology, including high-end computer chips. There's an ideological basis to the strategy. Xi Jinping has spoken about China becoming self-reliant, and that raises important questions about how China's leader sees its economic future. Well, I'm very pleased to be able to address some of those issues by consulting an expert on the political thought of Xi Jinping, Dr. Olivia Chung. She's written a book on that very topic, published by Oxford University Press and co-authored with Professor Steve Tsang, director of the SOAS China Institute. Olivia, welcome to China in Context.
Thank you for having me, Duncan.
Now, I must admit, I'm a little surprised that Xi Jinping is emphasizing the idea that China should be self-reliant. Surely China depends on trading goods with the rest of the world. It's not a self-contained economy. What do you think Mr. Xi means by self-reliance?
I think there are two sides to that. The first is China needs to be genuinely a world-leading economy, and that means that China can supply China's domestic needs. So the first side then is really national pride and also an ambition to become world leading economically. And the second side, closely related, is about national security. The idea being that if China is dependent on Western countries to supply core and cutting edge technologies, then China's security also becomes vulnerable to their possibly any negative attempts to undermine China.
That's a very interesting response. Well, look, all the experts I've talked to recently in the field of business say that China is definitely becoming more competitive. And they give an example, which is from the area of electric vehicles. Now, I think the official line is that China has done well in this area as a result of what's known as technological advancement through emulation. Well, that's probably a bit of a euphemism. Critics see it quite differently, of course. They say that China's success follows intellectual property theft on a grand scale. How do you see the situation?
IP theft is a common recurring complaint of, you know, Western governments and business chambers against China. I think there is definitely, you know, a lot of evidence of documented IP theft. But even more so, there are IP obtained via more legal or semi-legitimate mechanisms. For example, you know, there are hard requirements in some sectors for foreign firms to form joint ventures with Chinese partners in order to enter the Chinese market. And quite often that would lead to, you know, foreign IP being divulged to the Chinese partner. There are also practices like talent poaching, you know, or the use of regulatory review panels to obtain, you know, foreign IP. So these are more semi-legitimate mechanisms. And I won't call those IP theft. They are more like involuntary technology transfer.
Oh, well, thanks for clarifying that. Look, Olivia, I admire your work as a scholar on China, and I think you must have enormous patience. Because one of the tough things about looking closely through all the political jargon is getting to grips with some of the ideas that lie behind these strange phrases. I mean, I found one a lot when I was researching this podcast, new productive forces. We often hear that term mentioned by Xi Jinping. What do you think it means?
It refers to frontiers of science and technology, such as new energy, new materials, advanced manufacturing, and digital technology. Now, China's economic strength under Xi Jinping is really shifting from, you know, traditional heavy polluting industries or low-skill manufacturing to these, you know, more high-end sectors. I think what is more significant is that Xi Jinping has been effectively encouraging new productive forces for more than 10 years already. So why a new term to, you know, capture something that he has been doing for so long? So I think that is the, you know, greater significance behind the term. I think it is about political signaling in important ways. First of all, it's contrasting, you know, an emerging potentially bright spot of the Chinese economy with the bus property sector. It is about stimulating investor confidence in the Chinese economy and signaling that the government is willing to commit even greater resources to new tech sector at a time when the Chinese economy is not doing great and they are, you know, enduring and expanding technological embargoes in Western countries.
Well, those are good points, Olivia. And we've actually heard on the podcast recently from economists about how investor confidence, particularly among foreign investors in China, has declined recently. Now, look, when the US Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen visited China earlier this year, she chided China's leaders for unfair economic practices. And what she implied is that China has a policy of making more than it needs, and in fact, more than the world can absorb. Is she right?
Overcapacity is a known problem in China for many years. It is not a Chinese government policy, but it is an unintended, although predictable, consequence of China's economic model. For example, the Chinese government is encouraging adoption of electric vehicles in China as part of Xi Jinping's technological aspiration and also a solution to pollution in China. So there are a lot of subsidies to encourage companies to set up EV factories in China, and there are also increasing uptake of EV by Chinese consumer. So the unintended consequence to that is that gasoline vehicles produced in China are now having a very hard time to attract consumers, and that lead to an overcapacity of gasoline vehicles. To put differently, there are more gasoline vehicles produced inside China than what the Chinese market can absorb, and hence that lead to an export of, you know, gasoline vehicles in very large numbers overseas. And because those vehicles are produced at a cheaper cost in China, they are able to be sold at a lower price in the overseas market compared to the same product produced elsewhere. And this is, you know, the background to the US complaint of unfair competition or Chinese dumping. However, it is really important to also appreciate that overcapacity is not only, you know, a problem that causes trade frictions between China and Western countries. It is also a domestic problem in China that causes headache for the Chinese government by resulting in job losses, for example, and also putting a huge demand on the government to upskill workers.
During the time that Joe Biden's been in the White House, America has placed an embargo on shipments of advanced technologies to China. Among other things, it's a strategy designed to stop China buying the technology it needs to manufacture high-end microchips. The Americans claim that the goal is to prevent the Chinese military getting hold of technology which could be weaponized, creating a threat to America and its allies. I'd like to ask you about this. Can you draw on your knowledge of Xi Jinping's thinking to tell us about this alleged link between the high-tech sector and the Chinese military?
So the link is definitely not simply speculative. It is an explicit Chinese government policy, and which Xi Jinping has emphasized explicitly many times. The official term of this policy is called military-civilian fusion. And what it means is deliberate government attempts and coordination to integrate the military and civilian innovation ecosystems in China rather than to keep them separate. It is about maximizing potentials of new technologies for dual use. In other words, both for commercialization, for popular use, and also for military strengthening. A good example would be artificial intelligence or AI. It has obvious commercial applications tied to the Internet of Things or being used in, you know, household daily appliances, in EVs or other connected devices. But it also has a very strong military potential, the use for military operation and command system, drones, or the use of big data really more effectively in enhancing warfare capabilities. So this is the gist of military-civilian fusion.
Well, I'd like to express my own view, if I may. It strikes me that placing a great deal of emphasis on the value of advanced technology carries something of a risk for China. This is not an easy area in which to invest. I mean, in fact, many governments have wasted a lot of money by backing the wrong types of tech. What do you make of China's record in this area?
China has have achieved mixed success in technological innovation under Xi Jinping's watch. We see a lot more success in green energy exports, such as electric vehicles, batteries, and solar technology. But we also see China struggling a lot harder in advanced semiconductors and artificial intelligence. To some level, that reflect different areas of Western tech embargoes. But the difference there also reflects that there are different industries that can benefit for at varying level of China's existing manufacturing base and China's existing supply chain. So I think the idea of backing, you know, selective technology is not new thinking. It's very much a legacy of industrial planning or a planned economy, the idea that the whole country need to work together to crack major problems, and that require high-level coordination. It is not about efficiency. The Chinese government isn't overly bothered with wasting money. As long as China can produce some very successful companies called national champions that can have huge success in the domestic and international markets.
Now, another point which I think is relevant to this conversation is that many what we might call old-fashioned companies, which are not high-tech, have gone out of business in China. I was reading about a furniture factory which has closed because its owners decided to shift production to Southeast Asia in a bid to cut costs. Now, that sounds similar to a trend in America a few decades ago when many companies shifted their manufacturing bases to other countries because wages were lower abroad. Blue-collar jobs were lost in the process, and in fact, that trend still creates a lot of resentment in some parts of the United States. What do you think are China's vulnerabilities in this area?
I think it is a real problem, and it's also being felt very much on the ground by those who are affected. And I think there is a certain visibility of those problems when you go inside China. I think, you know, like it goes back to the idea that there's a need of upgrading, upskilling workers. So what it means is that Chinese government investment shouldn't just focus on high-tech workers or high-tech industry. In order to support tech upgrading, the related thing to do is actually to upskill the entire lower-skilled working force. So it's a much bigger endeavor, much bigger attempt. But fundamentally, Xi Jinping does not see China's tech drive in terms of tackling overcapacity or unemployment of lower skilled workers. He really sees it as rejuvenating the Chinese nation and strengthening China's national security. So that would mean that, you know, blue collar workers losing jobs is not so much of his primary concern.
Well, thank you very much, Olivia. It's been great to get your insights. That was Dr. Olivia Chung, co-author of the book, The Political Thought of Xi Jinping, published by Oxford University Press. She's also a research fellow at the SOAS China Institute in London, which makes this podcast. And you can find out more about our courses and research at soas.ac.uk. But for now, that's all from us here on the China in Context podcast team.